You're listening to Reality Sandwich Radio, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, spirit, and our planet, community, and economy. To learn more about the Healthful Living model, go to healthfulliving.org. Reality Sandwich is hosted by Julie Matthews, Certified Nutrition Consultant, and Martin Matthews, Certified Medical Hypnotherapist. Past episodes of Reality Sandwich are available for free download at realitysandwichradio.com. Thanks for listening. You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and you've reached Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, the body, our planet, our collective human existence here on planet Earth. And today you might want to take a digestive enzyme to ingest this palatable taste of the truth that we're going to be serving you today. Today we'll be speaking all about nuclear energy, nuclear power, nuclear weapons. Our guest on the show today is Dr. Helen Caldicott. She is a world-famous anti-nuclear spokeswoman who, for the past 30 years, has been traveling across the planet, doing her best to inform each and every one of us about the truth behind nuclear energy and nuclear power, and writing... Go ahead, Julie.
I was going to say, and nuclear waste.
And nuclear waste. Today's show, we have we'll be playing just shortly an interview that Julie and I did with her just a couple of days ago, and Dr. Caldicott will be in town here in San Francisco next Thursday night, October 12th, at an event at the Castro Theater. She'll be interviewed by actor and advocate also Peter Coyote at an event at the Castro Theater. You can get information at that at nuclearpolicy.org, and she'll be discussing all the particulars of her new book, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. We've just learned that the October 12th event at the Castro Theater has been canceled. Please check nuclearpolicy.org for further details. And I'm here with my co-host today, Julie Matthews. Julie?
Hello.
And this is Healthful Living's radio show, Reality Sandwich. You can get this and past shows at realitysandwichradio.com. And before we go to our interview with Helen, I want to just go over a couple of points that have really jumped out to me as I've been learning more about nuclear power and going through Helen's new book. And as Helen wrote in her first book, Nuclear Madness, going back to 1978, she wrote as follows: "As a physician, I contend that nuclear technology threatens life on our planet with extinction. If present trends continue, the air we breathe, the food we eat, and the water we drink will soon be contaminated with enough radioactive pollutants to pose a potential health hazard far greater than any plague humanity has ever experienced." That was back in 1978 that she wrote that.
Oh, wow.
And she's written six books on nuclear technology and its dangers, and her latest book, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer, gives a carefully documented account of the reasons why.
And this is really good timing because of this whole global warming concept and global warming argument and discussion and other forms of power.
Well, I believe that's why she's titled the book this, because global warming has gotten, you know, much more media play of late. And it's not the kind of thing that you just say it's getting media play. Well, because it's showing up around the world and people are seeing the results of it. And thus, it's more in our collective consciousness and, fortunately, at least in some regard, in the media. And many people are touting, especially our government, using this opportunity to tout nuclear power. And
trying to make it seem like it's a safer alternative than fossil fuel.
Presenting false information, misleading information, using this to prop up an industry that really, bottom line, does not serve us, but makes a lot of people a lot of money. And they're using this opportunity to say, oh, nuclear power, that's great. No CO2 emissions.
Right.
It's safe for the planet. It's safe for all these things. Not true. Nuclear power is not the answer. And Dr. Helen Caldicott will tell us why in her new book. Each chapter covers a very separate and critical issue about commercial nuclear power. I just want to provide very briefly now a quick overview of some of the topics that she addresses in the book And then we'll play our interview with Dr. Caldicott. In chapter one of her book, she talks about the energetic costs of nuclear power and the fact that it takes fossil fuel burning power to produce nuclear energy. That is, the mining of uranium, the production of facilities, all the other infrastructure involved in what's called the nuclear fuel cycle takes tremendous energy and burning of fossil fuels to create and sustain.
That reminds me, what is there? There's a quote at the beginning of the book, I think, in the introduction, talking about, a quote that Rumsfeld or some of the leaders were saying about nuclear energy and how, do you know what I'm talking about and where?
I do, unfortunately.
I may be catching you off guard.
You are catching me off guard because I don't have it right in front of me here. But
well, if you find it, it's fascinating because it basically says that, you know, nuclear energy is safe and low emissions and all these things that are absolutely, totally false. And I was going to paint that little background picture so that the chapters would have a little context to them.
But I don't have the book in front of me, but when you do pick it up, you'll see that at the very beginning of the book, before she even launches in, she includes a quote both by President Bush and Vice President Cheney about nuclear power, making direct statements that are completely contradictory to the truth. Completely contradictory to the truth.
And yet this is what they're telling the American public, so they believe that it's true. That's where the problem, part of the problem comes in.
Well, and the challenge is, as you and I travel out and about, Julie, we run into people all the time who have their minds filled with this propaganda and have been saying things that without knowing any of the information behind it. Things like, oh, well, it works great in France. They have no problems, right?
Right.
So we should do it, too. Well, Dr. Caldicott speaks about that issue in our interview, as Julie asked her during our interview. So she'll speak about that France situation. Chapter 2 gets into the true economic costs of nuclear energy, the real bottom line cost in dollar and cents. And here she gets into helping us understand really how in bed this industry is with our government and all the different provisions of the 2005 energy bill. And I'll just slice it into a nutshell. Here we have an industry that's tremendously dangerous but only can survive with extreme government subsidy. What that means, ladies and gentlemen, is that you and I are paying for it with tax dollars, subsidizing an industry that's causing tremendous harm, producing, you know, this really isn't, you'll hear the interview. But basically, this energy bill also provides that the public will pay for the cleanup and infrastructure, for the cleanup in case there's any major breakdown or a meltdown anywhere. And the public has to pay for the infrastructure needed to support, to transport and store all the nuclear waste.
Now, how does this work in other industries? If you're going to take the gas industry or the electricity industry or another type of industry, does the public bear the burden for all of that?
It's the same scam that's in place for other industries, where the industries have less personal responsibility and have put that upon the government or the people to clean up after them in the event that they screw up.
Because nobody wants to invest in this industry because it's too risky. So they put that risk on the American people.
Right. One of the major and most incredible provisions of this 2005 energy bill is the repeal of the Public Utilities Holding Company Act, which was passed back in 1935 as part of the New Deal to prevent utility holding companies from scamming ratepayers and creating these monopolies. And our friends in Washington have repealed that, so once again, these companies can do whatever they want to do. In Chapter 3, she gets into nuclear power, radiation, and disease, the unaddressed human toll, and in here, she lays out very clearly and discreetly what's going on with respect to how many people are really dying in this industry, and, of course, the depleted uranium issue, where our government has decided to call uranium that has had only one component removed, depleted, and are using it in Iraq as weapons and I can't even get going on that. Chapter 4, she talks about the threat of accidental and terrorist-induced nuclear meltdowns as a result of having nuclear plants out there. I think we all know about that. Chapter 5, the entire nuclear waste issue.
Oh boy, this is my, I don't want to say my favorite, this is the most scary one of all of them.
As we speak, our government is still moving ahead full steam with a plan to move all the nuclear waste across the country to one location in Yucca Mountain in Nevada, which has not been proven to be safe, and there's no idea how they're going to transport this stuff, yet they're pushing full steam ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 6 covers Generation 4 nuclear reactors, the fact that these reactors are aging, there's challenges with them, they're not really working properly. The next chapter, she gets into the nuclear energy and nuclear weapons proliferation issues.
Mm-hmm.
The more nuclear plants that we build across the planet, the more possibility for having uranium enrichment facilities out there, more creation of weapons, more problems. Nuclear power and rogue nations, she gets into next. That really the U.S. and England are the rogue nations that are threatening each other. You know, this really scared the heck out of me, Julie, when I really learned this, because maybe I've been living in a, even though I come and do Reality Sandwich every week, in my mind, I was under the belief that a lot of these nuclear escalation issues were behind us.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we that's what we all believe. That's what we've all heard.
But the reality is that our country is still employing a policy and a belief that they can engage in and win a nuclear war.
Ugh.
No different than what it was back in the 80s when we were all scared about the Russia thing and the Reagan thing and the Sting song and all that stuff back then, right?
It's really...
I thought we had come past that.
Yeah, I...
Absolutely not. And...
Let's get into the interview soon.
Let's just go to the interview. So
let's hear from Helen herself. So we recorded this a couple days ago while she was in town. And look forward to hearing more from her on at her appearance in the Castro coming up soon.
Let's go to it.
And Caldicott, who is the world's leading spokesperson for the anti-nuclear movement and Nobel Peace Prize nominee as well. She's a best-selling author. Divides her time between Australia and Washington, where she is the president of the Nuclear Policy Research Institute. And for us here at Reality Sandwich, we're just so delighted to be on the line with you today, Dr. Caldicott. Our tagline is, a palatable taste of the truth.
Oh, that's nice. I like that.
And here we are in a day and age with so much deception in the media and so many mistruths, and this topic of nuclear energy and the related topics of global warming have been all over the news lately, and it's tremendously disconcerting of us to get a sense that we're being so deceived on something so tremendously impactful. And your new book just out says it directly and bluntly, nuclear power is not the answer. We would like to just ask you to please just share with us some of the just straightforward components, number one, of why it's not the answer. What are some of the deceptions that we really need to be waking up to and seeing?
Well, first I want to start with saying that the nuclear industry have lots of money, and they've spent hundreds of millions of dollars in the last few years on a massive propaganda campaign, lying. They lie and say that nuclear power is the answer, it produces no global warming, there are no emissions, it's safe, it's clean, it's green. And I, as a scientist, I really, really resent people lying about such important medical issues. So let's briefly walk you through this and follow it up by reading my book, because it's full of references and information that you'll need to make your arguments at dinner parties, over the Thanksgiving table and the like.
Mm-hmm.
Nuclear power, in fact, creates massive quantities of CO2 because you need a lot of fossil fuel to burn, to dig up the uranium, hundreds of thousands of tons, to crush the ore. In America, they have two huge coal-fired plants to generate the electricity to enrich the uranium. They use a lot of CFC gas, which is a potent global warmer, to cool the uranium diffusion enrichment process. CFC is banned internationally under the Montreal Protocol because it causes ozone depletion. But this particular nuclear facility has been grandfathered out of the Montreal Protocol, which is really wicked. You then build a reactor which only operates for 30 or 40 years before it becomes so radioactive you can't operate it anymore. It must then cool down radiologically, and then it must be cut apart by remote control by robots over time, using more and more and more fossil fuel. The radioactive waste, 30 tons a year, comes out of each reactor, a lot. There are 50,000 tons awaiting disposal, storage, transportation at all the reactors, 103 around the country. It's thermally very hot. It must be continually cool, because if it's not, it will melt down. it's open to terrorist attack, as are the reactors. And since 9/11, there's been no substantial increase in security at any of the reactors. You'd wonder what FEMA and the Department of Homeland Security is actually doing with their money. And that waste must be transported and stored safely for 500,000 years. And the fossil fuel implicit in doing that is enormous. Now, there are two scary things about this. One, we've reached peak oil, according to many people. That means from now on, the supply of oil will diminish. People are using oil in their SUVs, their Hummers and things, all of which must be banned immediately because we are on the brink of catastrophe from global warming, if you see Al Gore's film.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we run out of oil, we will not have the facilities to keep these witches' cauldrons of bubbling, thermally hot radioactive waste cool. We won't be able to transport them, make the cylinders, the casks, and store them for 500,000 years. So the legacy we leave to our descendants are casks and bubbling vats of radioactive waste, which will be pouring out their radiation into the environment for the rest of time, inducing epidemics of cancer, leukemia, and genetic disease forevermore. That's our legacy we leave to our descendants, so we can turn on our lights. So that's number one. Number two, nuclear power produces an awful lot of global warming gas. At the moment, a reactor will produce about one-third the amount of CO2 in toto, looking at mining, milling, enrichment, and the like, as a similar-sized gas-fired plant. But over time, 10 or 20 years, as we use up much of the available uranium ore, a reactor will produce the same amount of CO2 in toto as a fossil fuel plant. So we may as well just burn the fossil fuel and not have the radioactive waste.
But now, the president, though, recently said that they don't produce any pollution to greenhouse gases.
Well, I mean, the president isn't terribly bright. He is not a scientist. He clearly has not read the literature. He says, I don't even read the newspapers or watch the television. I get my information from my advisors. Who's his advisor on this? Dick Cheney, is he a scientist? No way. Who did he talk to before he formulated his energy policy? Kenny Lay from Enron. He was indicted. He met with him 5 times. Now he said, well, we think he said. And he met with oil, gas, and nuclear industry representatives. He will not release the minutes of those meetings which formulated the U.S. energy policy, as he is legally obliged to do. So the point is that less than 3% of American politicians are scientifically literate. And you can't run a country or run a world today without understanding the technological abnormalities in the way science is applied and how it's damaging our planet. And I guess I wrote a book about this years ago called If You Love This Planet, Global Warming, 80,000 Chemicals in Common Use, you know, overpopulation and all the rest. It's all in that, but this book specifically is about I can think of only one word, and, you know, people mightn't like it, the wickedness of the nuclear industry and how it lies. And it's a socialized industry. You pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Utilities make the profit, $1 million a day, by selling electricity, but you pay for all the infrastructure, the whole thing.
Well, I see.
It's funny to see a socialized industry in a capitalist free market economy.
Well, I think the average American citizen has no idea what's really going on and how they are paying for this. And to your earlier point, which I find tremendously shocking, is the ongoing infinite cost of this.
Infinite, that's right. It's like looking into space and trying to ponder where space ends. And then we get into infinity. And it's a good point. I hadn't actually associated infinity with this problem, but boy, I'm going to use that from now on.
I mean, something that we're using today I was really feeling the pain of this yesterday as I was preparing to speak with you today, just at how my children's 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 forever will be having to store the waste of what we used today to...
And we'll be dealing and eating radioactive food. But imagine people waking up in the morning, generation 10, the breast milk already radioactive with strontium-90 in it and cesium-137. Babies who are so sensitive to the carcinogenic effects of radiation, 20 times more than adults, drinking the milk, getting their cancers at 5 or 10 instead of 60. And then babies being born with Downs and Prediabetes and cystic fibrosis and phenylketonuria and diabetes, you name it. There are 16,000 genetic diseases now described. So it's almost beyond my imagination to encompass what we're talking about.
And I think clearly beyond the imaginations of, unfortunately, most people, because therefore it's so easy to keep all of this in denial. And this book outlines very clearly the facts and the evidence to help perhaps get some of that information into people's heads.
Yeah, I'd like to actually kind of ask a question about that, because I've heard more than once, oh, you know, France is using nuclear power so successfully, and then they tout all of these comments by world leaders and things. So what can you say to people right now?
Okay, I'll tell you this. France is a crazy country. I've got a French son-in-law who's a count. They tend to be pretty arrogant. It's true that 80% of their electricity is generated by nuclear power. They're an agrarian society. They simply love their food and wine. Nuclear power plants can't operate on a daily basis without releasing a lot of radioactive material, which lands on their food and bioconcentrates in their food. The French government is so allergic to people knowing about the dangers of nuclear power that they said that the fallout from Chernobyl stopped at the French border. Now they're seeing an increased incidence of cancer related to the Chernobyl fallout, and they're having to admit that that was a lie. They don't know what to do with their radioactive waste, which piles up in hundreds of tons. At their nuclear power plants, they've got nowhere to put it. Same with Japan. It's also pertinent to say that 40% of the European landmass is currently radioactive from Chernobyl, and the food is radioactive and will remain so for the next 600 years minimum. I talk about that in my book. I do not buy European food. I don't drink French wine. It's medically contraindicated. So this is a catastrophe beyond belief. And the nuclear industry keeps touting France as evidence that it's all hunky-dory. But I have seen few epidemiological studies done of people living around the old French reactors to see the incidence of cancer. That really isn't in the literature. And if you don't do the studies, then you don't have to know, do you?
No, you don't.
We'll talk about this more when I'm going to be interviewed with Peter Coyote at the Castro Theater on October, I believe it is the 12th. And if everyone comes, we can have a wonderful time debating this issue with Peter and with the crowd. You know, we can really get stuck into it in great depth.
Well, I'm sure you must get people who are just staunch conservatives, or, you know, the hard, fast believers who just tout the fact that the world is in a perilous situation. We are running out of oil. Demands for power across the globe are increasing dramatically, especially in Asia. And some of them just say, look, there's nothing else, so let us just distort the nuclear data and go full steam ahead, because they are,
well,
in fact, building over there, aren't they?
I'm a conservative. I am for conserving life on the planet. I took the Hippocratic Oath. I do this for no money. I earn practically no money, but I do it because I'm impelled to do it, because it's my vocation. And I don't want people dying of diseases that are incurable, like cancer and genetic disease. And the medical dictum states that if you have an incurable disease, the only recourse is prevention. So basically, nuclear power is a cancer-inducing industry, period, whose transient byproduct for about 30 years is the generation of electricity. Now, people say we need energy. All right. I'm putting together a roadmap for a totally carbon-free, nuclear-free future using an array of renewables, the technology which is currently available. It's so cheap compared to nuclear power, it's laughable. Solar, wind, hydro, geothermal, cogeneration, tidal, wave, and above all, conservation. Now, in America, 20% of your electricity is generated from nuclear power. If you stop using your clothes dryers, made by GE, that makes good things for life, like clothes dryers, nuclear power plants, and nuclear weapons, and you hung your clothes outside under the big nuclear reactor in the sky, which we do in Australia, and in the winter hung them up by your furnace, you know, in the basement, you would not need your clothes dryers. One. Two, if you turn off all your lights in your house except the room in which you're in, if you turn off all your VCRs, your computers, the DVDs, all those blinking lights, you will save 5 to 10% of the electricity sucked out of the grid every 24 hours. Mm. If you do those two things, no clothes dryers, and I may suggest don't use a dishwasher, more electricity use, you put about a gallon of water in the sink, some rinsing water in the other sink, 2 gallons, and you wash your dishes by hand. I do it. It's very meditative. It's contemplative, and you're not using electricity. If you do those things, you will save 20% of the electricity America currently uses, and in fact, the same amount that nuclear power generates, and you can actually save 28% of the electricity that you use. In Europe, they have the same standard of living as the US, and they use 50% less energy. So you have to be conscious. Like, you have to stop at stoplights. There should be a law mandating that no one can drive an SUV, no one can drive a Hummer, no one can drive those god-awful stretch limos that probably do 2 miles to the gallon, that they all should be bashed down and recycled, that there should be a solar panel on every single roof in the United States subsidized by the federal government. There should be solar hot water systems on every house which use hardly no electricity. There should be windmills dotting the country, and in fact, farmers in the Midwest are making more money now out of their wind farms than they are growing food, and they can do both, grow food underneath the windmill.
Mm.
And every house should be subsidized to have a hybrid car by the federal government. Where's the money coming from? Stop spending the money on killing, which is, you know, over $600 billion a year, nearly $1 trillion, and use the money to save the planet. If FDR was still alive, you would have a new deal with mass transit systems being built in every single city. If you look at my book and look up the city of Portland, the mayor there has done the most wonderful things in Portland in energy conservation, and he is used as a prototype, really, for this book. They've now reduced their CO2 production below 1990 levels. Entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley call green energy green, not because it's green, but because it produces a lot of greenbacks. That's where the money will be in the future. Get going. I mean, by God, do we need entrepreneurs? Do we need politicians to be educated by their constituents? Go and see your representatives and tie them to the chair and educate them.
Well, let's further incite the public with some truth. You mentioned subsidies a few moments ago. Just the shocking extent to which this industry is subsidized by our own tax dollars.
I know. Well, they voted $13 billion last year in the energy bill for nuclear power, and that goes to universities to do more research. It goes as tax breaks and all sorts of really tricky, sleazy systems by which the nuclear power industry benefits. That money would only subsidize about 5 reactors, each of which now costs $5 to $6.5 billion to build. I'm just down here in Atlanta and in Savannah River, just few hundred miles south of here. They want to build 2 new nuclear power plants. They have streamlined the licensing process such that the public hardly has any way to intervene to stop the ground being broken to build these things. Savannah River itself has very many tanks of highly radioactive waste, some of which are leaking into the river. And poor people downstream will be drinking radioactive water and eating radioactive food. I mean, I feel like when I'm here in the southeast of America, I'm sort of next to Hades, you know?
Mm.
And when my father used to read me the Greek myths of legends, there was a dog called Cerberus with eyes the size of dinner plates who guarded the gates of hell. Well, I'm down here at the gates of hell, and we have to educate the general public about how incredibly dangerous this is. And it was your wonderful Jefferson who said an informed democracy will behave in a responsible fashion. I've seen America have a revolution in the 80s on nuclear weapons. We now must do it again.
Well, we certainly believe so here, and I know that we're in San Francisco, so perhaps it's a bit easier for us. But your earlier point about people need to be conscious of this. And when they are conscious, or hopefully in their, you know, innate human caring self, they'll blatantly see the truth.
Oh, they will. If they read the book, there's no doubt that they'll get it. And if they read the book, Nuclear Power's Not the Answer, they will have enough information to debate Dick Cheney on television, on Jim Lehrer, any night, and absolutely beat him, hands down.
What?
Knowledge is ammunition.
Why is this nuclear power being so touted and being paid for when we have these renewable sources that are better, that... Why? Who are these people that are propping up this industry, and why is it so important to them?
Look, I get into this a little bit in my book, but, you know, most emotional motivations are engendered in the reptilian midbrain. And we use our neocortex to justify what our midbrain tells us and wants us to do. The men in the nuclear industry, and they often use women as their sort of public relations people. I just debated with one this morning, which drives me crazy because they lie. and they're not really science. She was a nuclear engineer, so we really couldn't discuss the issues about which I care so deeply. The men are into power, prestige. As Henry Kissinger said, power is the ultimate aphrodisiac. There's a lot of money to be available from the from your tax dollars for their careers. Why aren't the politicians subsidizing or paying for renewables? Why aren't they? Well, partly because less than 3% of them are scientifically literate. They don't really know what they're doing. And you know how the Congress operates. I mean, it's money passing hands continuously. And not many have the guts, and I mean the guts, to stand up and speak the truth because, ooh, their contributions might fall off. You know that sort of thing? They're not being pressured or pressurized enough by their constituents because they don't know either. The nuclear industry is spending hundreds of millions of dollars. By God, I wish someone would give me hundreds of millions of dollars to speak the truth. I mean, I should be being subsidized, not them. And so I just see it as such evil, and I really say that in an advisedly careful medical way. And I go back to the Bible, thou shalt not kill. And this is a killing industry. Well, I'll say so is coal. Yeah, coal is. And we've got to stop burning coal. We've got to stop burning fossil fuel. If you see Al Gore's film, which is mandatory viewing, you'll know why. But the truth is we have answers. And this roadmap I'm putting together for a totally renewable, carbon-free, nuclear-free future will be available in April. And if you go to my website, nuclearpolicy.org, you'll be able to find out about it. And we have, in process, the prescription for survival. So, you know, you can get depressed, but by God, the answers are there.
How much of this has to do with the weapons industry? What is there a bleed over or a fuzzy, blurry line in there?
The nuclear power industry is an infant, an offspring of the weapons industry, set up by the men in the Manhattan Project who made the nuclear weapons, who are racked by guilt. I knew them. I worked with the majority of them. They were so upset about what they'd done. They thought if they could just harness atoms for peace, they could die with clear consciences. But I argued with all of them. And they knew the toxicity of plutonium. They knew its half-life. They knew that, you know, millions of grams is carcinogenic. They were scared of it. They knew the dangers of radioactive waste, yet they persisted in an almost psychotic way to support the nuclear power industry in order to die with clear consciences. But I have to tell you, none of those men did. I got to know them really well. They were really fine men and, of course, quite brilliant. But, boy, have they left an awful, awful, awful legacy. And the other thing I want to say is that what do we do with radioactive waste that lasts for 500,000 years and no one knows where to put it? You know, my solution is there are weapons makers at the Los Alamos and Lawrence Livermore Labs, many of whom I think have Asperger's. And my next book is going to be called Why Men Kill, dedicated to Donald Rumsfeld. But I'm going to explore the etiology of the arms industry and the nuclear power industry and the, you know, the hormonal receptors in the brain and the like. But these men now are currently designing, developing, testing and building 50 to 400 new hydrogen bombs a year. How dare they? And the government's paying for it. They call it Stockpile Stewardship and Maintenance Program, SSNM. It's not that. It's they're making new weapons. Now, I would, if I was president, and God, I wish I was, because think what you could do. I would close down those labs or redeploy all those fellows into using their brilliant left brains to work out what to do with the radioactive waste for 500,000 years. And those bomb makers remind me of doctors. Now, we don't clean up our waste either. We'll operate and we'll leave the operating room in a filthy mess, bloody swabs everywhere, bits of organs, you name it. Who cleans up after us? The nurses do. Well, now these guys have to be turned into nurses, and they have to work out what they're going to do with the mess that they've left behind.
Mm.
It's very clear. I mean, and they've got the brilliance. They just put them to work.
It's tremendously upsetting to learn now that our government is full steam ahead with nuclear weapons research
and development,
and that their attitude is still the same as it was 20-something years ago.
Well, you know, of the 30,000 nuclear weapons currently in the world today, America and Russia own 97% of them. They still have each other targeted on air trigger alert on the missiles with thousands of hydrogen bombs. Thousands. When 1,000 bombs dropping on 100 cities could cause nuclear winter and the end of life on Earth, except the cockroaches, maybe. So America still has a policy to fight and win a nuclear war against Russia, even though they're best friends. And that makes Russia very paranoid, so much so that Yeltsin in 1995 got to within 10 seconds of pressing his button and blowing up the United States. That was a big article in the New York Times. So we live on the edge of nuclear catastrophe every second of every day. Nobody talks about it.
Mm-hmm.
The real rogue states in the world are America and Russia. And why have they still got their weapons? Because William Jefferson Clinton had no guts to take on the Pentagon and say, now we're friends with Russia, Boris Yeltsin and I are going to sign an agreement to abolish nuclear weapons in 5 years.
Mm.
There was a precedent for that when Gorbachev and Reagan met at Reykjavik over a weekend, and they almost agreed, two mere mortals, to abolish nuclear weapons very quickly. That's what we have to do, and they have no right to run around with microscopes looking at Iran, for God's sake, saying, ooh, they might be building a bomb. We've got to drop nuclear weapons on them, which currently is the Pentagon's plan. There's no evidence, according to the International Atomic Energy Agency, that Iran is building or developing highly enriched uranium. It's America that has to look at the moat in its own eye, you know, and so does Russia. And I have very strong feelings about this because William Jefferson Clinton actually negated the work I spent my life doing, which was to arouse the public, to understand the medical dangers of nuclear war, to rise up against nuclear arms. And he didn't get rid of them because he was gutless. And I say that carefully. He had no courage. And the people, and he prepared the way for these people in the White House now who remind me of the Sopranos. To do what they do with impunity. It's so dangerous.
Talk about war and this depleted uranium thing. I'm sure this could be a whole topic, so we won't spend too much time, but where does that, quote, depleted uranium, that, quote, what sounds like harmless uranium, where does that come from? And
oh, God knows. I suppose the weapons industry or the nuclear power industry, you know, they use such great euphemisms. You the radioactive waste is called a swimming pool. So when you dig up uranium, it's got two isotopes, 235 and 238. 235 is a fissionable material. It's present in 0.7%. It must be enriched to 3% for use in nuclear power. Right. If you enrich it over 50%, you've got bomb-grade material. The stuff left behind is uranium-238, which is depleted of uranium-235. Okay, it's not depleted of your radiation. It's 1.7 times more dense than lead. If you make it into a solid shell of 10 pounds and fire it at another fellow's tank, it slices through the steel of the tank like a hot knife through butter. It's very reactive, so up to 80% of it burns, producing tiny little particles that can be inhaled into the lung. In Basra, where they used 360 tons of this stuff in 1991, my colleagues, pediatricians, noticed an increased incidence of childhood cancer. and it's gone up 700%, seven times. And the incidence of severe congenital deformities, like babies born with no brain, single eyes, no arms, has gone up 700% too. Women are too scared to deliver their babies for fear of what will emerge from their vaginas.
Mm.
And the thing about this uranium 238 is its half-life is 4.5 billion years. So America is conducting a nuclear war in Iraq, contaminating the cradle of civilization for the rest of time. And those people are now destined to live with cancer in their children and severe congenital deformities forevermore.
Unbelievable.
This is unbelievable.
Clearly the human species is suffering some significant psychosis in that we're behaving...
Collective psychosis, I agree with that.
Behaving in a way where we are creating our demise. And
right. We're being suicidal. And, you know, when we have a patient who emerges in our consulting room who's suicidal, that's an acute clinical emergency. We hospitalize them straight away. So my task and your task is, I believe, to break through this psychic numbing that we all tend to practice. Crack open the soul, the beauty of the soul, and get people feeling uncomfortable. And I know it's not American to feel uncomfortable. But as Jung said, the avoidance of legitimate suffering is the cause of all mental illness.
Mm.
And one third of Americans are currently on antidepressants, covering up their discomfort, really knowing that what I'm saying is true. And if they get into their pain and their grief, they will grow psychologically and spiritually, and then they will be guided to use their very special talents to save the planet.
Yes.
No, I think that's so true.
It's been an absolute pleasure to connect with you, and we appreciate your time. We know you're busy. You're on a tour across the country promoting the new book, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. And you'll be here in town at the beloved Castro Theater at an event next Thursday evening, actually a week from this Thursday, a week from today, October 12th, Thursday night at the Castro Theater, with Peter Coyote, who's
absolutely
the actor and environmentalist.
We're going to have a great time that night. And
really?
Everyone can participate in the discussion. You can deal with a discussion from a psychological point of view, from a spiritual point of view, from an ecological point of view, from a medical point of view. I mean, all sorts of things are open for discussion. It should be very lively, stimulating, and above all, educative.
Excellent. It begins with the individual.
Oh, absolutely.
So we appreciate your time, Helen. And we'll connect with you next week.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Caldicott. Take care. Bye.
Okay.
We're back here in the studio.
Hopefully.
Live with Martin and Julie on Reality Sandwich. That was our interview conducted just a couple of days ago with Dr. Helen Caldicott. And she'll be speaking next Thursday evening at the Castro Theater here in San Francisco. You can get more information and tickets for the event at nuclearpolicy.org. And you'll be able to hear that interview again. It's going to be available for free download at realitysandwichradio.com. We apologize for the quality. It was as best as we could do given the funky phone lines. But you can hear Helen loud and clear, and her message is loud and clear as well, that we, the human race, are clearly suffering some sort of psychosis and have been for many years. I know that I've been aware of this all of my life and have just always been tremendously curious why this whole nuclear thing has ever happened in the first place. I mean, I don't really understand where it all stemmed from initially, but I have been aware all my life that the creation of nuclear power results in waste that needs to be stored forever and protected forever. And there's so many facts and different things that we can look at about nuclear power from all different angles, but just that one thing alone has baffled me for just all of my life as to how could we be engaging in something that produces waste that is toxic and threatens all life forever. Why would we do that? I just don't get it.
I think people don't know that these are the ramifications. I mean, when you hear about nuclear power, you never hear about any of this stuff. When you hear about countries and places using it, you never hear about any of the problems, any of the waste things. You don't hear about that you need all of that fossil fuel just to get it ready to go ahead and then use in the plant itself.
Right.
And that over time, you're going to actually use just as much, if not more, fossil fuel on top of the fact that you're now creating all of this toxic material. I think that people don't know, and I think Helen is also absolutely correct, that if people might have some suspicion, they're certainly not going to go there in their mind because it's too crazy. It's too terrifying. It's complete madness what we're up to right now. And just to realize it and think about it is, I think, beyond what most people are, it's beyond most people's comfort zone.
Well, it clearly explains why it's so easy to just ignore it and shove it under the rug. But we do have to look at these things right now in our world because we are living in a time, certainly since 9/11, completely full of fear. Some real, a lot of it extremely fabricated. And there's been tremendous opportunists out there playing on that fear. And right now we have an industry, the nuclear industry, globally, and in cahoots with our government, just touting all these incorrect things about nuclear power because everybody wants to believe that it's the savior because of the global warming situation and the high cost of oil and the fact that we're running out of oil. So everyone's running to something that is not a saving grace and, in fact, is really our ultimate demise. Right now, there are 438 nuclear power plants around the globe. 113 of those are here in the U.S. 33 countries have nuclear power generating facilities, and many more are being built right now, mostly in Asia.
There's a proposal for 2,000 new nuclear power plants to be built in these emerging countries and developing countries, as well as the countries that already have them. 2,000, and those plants in operation would produce an inventory of about 20,000 metric tons of plutonium, the most deadly of all toxic substances known to man, dwarfing the current amount in the world today to an enormously dangerous level. So, you know, we think it's bad now. It's just going to keep getting worse and worse and worse unless we put a stop to it.
And there are currently, according to Helen's book, over 30,000 nuclear bombs currently in existence right now on planet Earth.
Yeah, what did they say? Enough to blow up every person on the planet 9 times or something?
Yes. And at present, our tax dollars are paying for nuclear research with researchers at Los Alamos and Lawrence Livermore Lab right now working on developing and testing more nuclear weapons.
Oh, it's terrible. Just the depleted uranium alone since the first Gulf War, when they were using this, they found out that they're using, now they're not only using the uranium isotope, but they're using plutonium and neutronium and a higher reactive uranium, the 236. And now they're saying that the neutronium and the uranium isotope, the 236, are 100,000 times more dangerous than the 238 that they had used in the other DU weapons. So you're spraying this, like she said, all over that country. It's not just staying in that country. It goes into the atmosphere, and it eventually encircles the globe. It's making military people very, very, very sick. It's being documented all over the place, and yet people don't know about it, don't hear about it, don't want to know about it. I think you can't possibly fathom what is going on, and it's just too much for your brain to take in. So I think people just ignore the whole subject.
Yeah, it becomes too easy just to ignore it. I mean, it's like here in San Francisco, we live every day with the threat. Well, it's not really a threat, it's just a real reality, the potential, possibility, eventuality of an earthquake, right?
Mm-hmm.
We all know that's going to happen someday because that's just the nature of the ground that we live on. And you know, we don't have to think about that every moment. And here's something else that clearly we don't have to think about and don't want to think about, that, you know, we live every day with the, you know, with hundreds of weapons targeted on San Francisco on hair trigger alert.
Oh, I know.
You know, and honestly, if that were to happen, we wouldn't know about it, right? We'd be gone.
Right.
But if something happens and it's another city globally, I mean, it seems like an eventuality. I mean, I hate to say it, but it scares the heck out of me to just even think about that we, the human race, have created this circumstance where, number one, we already have to deal with it into perpetuity,
mm-hmm.
and we don't even know how we're going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much of it right now in our backyards that is problematic, mm-hmm. that we don't even know how to store. all the waste is piling up, and the government's planning on schlepping it all over to Yucca Mountain.
Yeah, driving it on our highways.
On trains across the country. There was a great 60 Minutes story on that about a year or so ago, how they have this entire plan.
Three towns.
They have this plan in place to transport the most dangerous material in the world, in a plan that is completely impossible to execute, dangerous, yet we all just stand by and go, oh, okay, we hope they'll take care of it.
Yeah, we got to put it somewhere, so. I know, it's, what I really like about Dr. Caldicott is her understanding of the human being, and how, from a health perspective, these things are so important, these issues. She says that about 80% of known cancers are environmentally caused with a combination of different carcinogenic chemicals. There's 80,000 chemicals that she mentioned that are in existence, and add this to the top of the list. This is far more significant. So I'm not even so concerned that someone's going to push a button and a bomb is going to go off, but that we are literally poisoning our planet right now every single day. So we might not end up with a nuclear winter. We're just going to end up with poisoned soil and poisoned water. And I mean, for 40% of the European landmass to be poisoned with a nuclear byproduct that's going to last pretty much the rest of our existence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the one that's happened so far. It's not the ones that could happen in the future as all of these older plants wear down and as all this stuff gets transported around the country, and then when it gets put into a mountain like Yucca Mountain where there's earthquakes and things. And I mean, and then we're going to continue to go full steam ahead to where?
Albert Einstein, whose original theories led to the development of atomic power, knew these threats really well and knew the challenges we would face when we first split the atom back in 1946. He said, after he understood the horror of Hiroshima, he said, "Our world faces a crisis as yet unperceived by those possessing the power to make great decisions for good and evil. The unleashed power of the atom has changed everything save our modes of thinking, and thus we drift towards unparalleled catastrophe."
Wow.
So we've really opened up this box to, I hate to end a show on saying we opened up a box to our demise, but I also believe that nothing is without the possibility of change, and I believe that we're living in a time where a tremendous number of people like you and me and our listeners who are realizing that we've got to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And we may not have exactly the prescription for what it is to do, and I can't tell you in 2 minutes, here's what you should do. But there's so many different topics we've talked about here on Reality Sandwich and we'll continue to talk about. But number one is simply awareness, understanding, and bringing it back to your own self about what do you want to be aware of and tolerating, and what kind of a world do you want to be involved in co-creating, because you are every day, whether you're doing something to help make the world better or you're doing nothing and just tolerating the way that it is that you complain about all the time. You can't not be involved in one way or another in the co-creation of everything that our world is comprised of.
Well, like you said, awareness. If people go out and get Helen's book and read it and pass it along to their family members and talk to their family members and their friends, I mean, literally tomorrow or a month from now, whatever that time frame is, that it would take for a majority of the country to know what was really going on, because it's really that they don't know and they haven't wanted to know. So if you're willing to have the courage to know, then you can do something about it. And if everybody tomorrow knew, we could stop the whole thing.
Right. Things that we don't like only continue because we allow them to continue. So be cognizant of where you spend your money, what are you reinforcing, and who are you electing into office to be in charge of the policies that we are all a part of, right? Because our politicians, these politician people, are just people that we hire to be leaders in certain capacities and do a job for us. So if there are people that want that job that do not align with what you believe in, don't give them the job. I know it sounds simple, but it's a bigger and broader principle that you have to take inside yourself and see what it means for you.
Yeah, it's not going to change overnight, because we may not have two good candidates to choose from. But the fact is, if we all demanded tomorrow that this was unacceptable, I guarantee you they would change their tune fast.
Yeah. So I implore you to listen to the interview again at realitysandwichradio.com. There's lots of facts and figures from there. And definitely get Helen's new book, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. go to the Castro Theater next Thursday night and hear her interview. You'll get a free copy of the book when you go. Nuclearpolicy.org is the place to go for information about the Castro Theater event. And you'll have all kinds of specific insights and information, real knowledge, real tidbits to be able to debate with anybody who ignorantly is touting the wonders of nuclear power. You'll be able to go up against them and tell them the truth. And you'll be able to have heard it here at Reality Sandwich, where hopefully today we've given you at least some palatable taste of what's going on in reality with respect to nuclear weapons and nuclear power.
Hopefully those digestive enzymes were helpful.
Yes. We're here every Thursday at noon on 89.5 KPOO San Francisco. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified medical hypnotherapist and healthful living advocate. And I've been here today with...
Julie Matthews, certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living, talking about topics that are important to all of us for our overall health.
We'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in. You've been listening to Reality Sandwich on 89.5 KPOO, San Francisco. This show and any past shows of Reality Sandwich are available for free download at realitysandwichradio.com, where you can also read about upcoming shows. To learn more about Julie Matthews or Martin Matthews, go to healthfulliving.org. Thanks for listening.